Hello and welcome to the Tank Slappers podcast, Autosport and the Motorsport Network's podcast for all things two-wheeled. I am your host, Lewis Duncan, and joining me, as ever, is Oriol Puigdemont, and we are going to discuss the Grand Prix of the Americas because the sheriff is back. Marc Marquez is back on top of the box in America. And Yuri, it was a mighty display from Marc Marquez, but in circumstances that weren't so easy because he was struggling the whole weekend, you know, with the bike, a little bit physically as well, but in the race he was perfect.
Yeah, I mean, don't forget that this a track that really suits him really good, but also the track conditions were not the best for considering his physical condition at the moment, and he made the most of it. So yeah, well done to him. And in a way, on Saturday night, we all thought that that was a possibility because the way he was speaking, and you know, despite he was saying that the result was good, but the feeling wasn't, he had the speed. So if this guy has the speed, we all know that he's gonna be there. And in the end, he did the perfect race and the most intelligent one.
Yeah, for sure. I mean, a couple of things that kind of stood out. One was the fact he did admit that yes, the race was a struggle for him, but it was a struggle for everybody, so it almost leveled the playing field a little bit in that respect. But one thing that kind of helped him, he said, was that on Saturday, he just wasn't feeling comfortable on the bike. So he said the worst thing he could have done was force his body. So he thought, I'll do what I need to do for qualifying and then preserve myself for the race. Which is interesting because it sort of shows the mindset he has to approach races now with his physical condition. You know, he can't just go into it all guns blazing like he used to. He has to be more tactical about how he goes about things.
Yeah, I mean, he was very clever because I think at the moment he understands that if he pushes his body over the limit, he's going to pay it off. I mean, yeah. he's gonna pay it. So he told us that he was lucky to get this FP1 session in the wet. So he was able to manage the situation. And yeah, he has. I think that's the new mark that we have to face, and we have to understand that he will probably, this is probably the new Mark, the new version of Mark we're gonna have.
Yeah, I mean, he's still very much figuring himself out, this new version of Mark. So he's, you know, when we go back to Misano, that will be interesting because he was strong at Misano but was still quite far off, which he kind of put down to the bike more than anything. But you could get what we saw in Austin, is you get that feeling that once he figures out how to properly be this new Mark, then he will be really, really strong, you know, like he used to be. It's that kind of impression you get.
In a certain tracks, probably yes, he will be the same kind of Mark, not the same kind of Mark regarding the riding style, but the same kind of power that or the outcome that he will be able to get. In terms of riding style, he is probably the same Mark than he was before on left-hand circuits, but I have a lot of doubts, and we'll put it in an article during the week about how he will be able to get his maximum level of performance on the right-handed tracks.
Yeah, and of course the problem Mark faces as well going forward is the fact that the competition now is so strong. You know, he's not going to have an easy time of it. Another thing that kind of made this weekend difficult, and not just for him, for everyone, was the state of the Circuit of the Americas. Very, very bumpy. But, you know, a lot of riders calling it dangerous. You know, Fabio Quartararo called it a joke. It's the same kind of things we hear almost every year, but it did seem really, really bad this year. And it seems that to come back next year, they have to resurface from turns 2 to turns 10. That's the minimum. But I have some reservations about that because I spoke to someone at the weekend, Yarnazavelli from Studio Dromo, and he said the problem isn't the track surface as such, it's the fact that the tracks, the job wasn't done correctly because it wasn't overseen by a specialist company like Silverstone was, for example.
The thing is that we this problem is not new. We've been hearing that for the last 4 years, and I asked directly to Aleix, because he's one of the most vocal guys in the grid, and he was pretty clear. He said, yes, I 100% agree with you, and that's something that it really, I don't really like it, because we've been complaining a lot, and they are putting these patches, which makes our lives even more difficult. So, they need to do something. Otherwise, at least they were able to get the promise that if they don't resurface the track from turn 2 to turn 10, they're not going to come back next year.
Yeah, but whether the circuit can do that is the next story, because it doesn't have a lot of money. I know it is.
Exactly.
From what I understand, there was a point where the circuit had a lot, that was given a lot of money, and they spent very little of it on track works that needed to be done. And yeah, like I say, the problem wasn't so much the way the surface was laid. It was, well, it was the way the surface was laid, and the fact that they did it quite cheaply and quite badly. But there is a precedent for this, because Bruno was struck from the calendar because they couldn't do track works. Silverstone was given that ultimatum. Barcelona was given the ultimatum as well, that they had to fix the track or we don't race.
Yeah, but so, the problem is that this is very common on the American tracks. The bad conditions of the surface of the tarmac, but we all know how, I mean, the interest that the championship has on going to the States at least once a year. So we have to keep that in mind.
Yeah.
In order to don't rush up and to you know.
Yeah, it's a very important market for MotoGP, so you have to think that there will be a lot of effort made to make these changes. Just quickly on safety, because of course it was another topic after the race in Moto3, because we had another accident, and I don't know about you, but I'm starting to kind of not have an appetite for Moto3 style racing anymore, because we just see far too many incidents like this. We've seen far too many deaths this year, and okay, Dennis Andre was given a harsh penalty, which was good, but it doesn't address the real problem in this kind of racing.
Well, yeah, but it's a starting point.
Yeah.
It's a starting point. I mean, maybe not for Onku, but I mean, if they do it once and then they repeat it again in the second one, in the third one, it will be, in a way, at some point, they will say, calm down. We need to relax a bit, otherwise it's not going to... it's not gonna work it, because it's not gonna work it out, because we are here to get money. And in order to get money, we need to score points and we need to be on top. And if we don't race, we don't have the opportunity to show the sponsors. Blah 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 blah. I think it's a good starting point, but they need to keep this level of standards, which is not gonna be easy. I think that was the right call.
Yeah, I agree,
but it needs to be really consistent, this level of severity.
It's not just the penalties as well, I think it's the overall style of racing needs to change. A lot of people have spoken about this over the past week, that they think that maybe the bikes need to be made a little bit more powerful, because there's no real margin for a rider to make a difference on these bikes. So this is why we get these big pack races. And when you can have a pack race where you've got really good guys in it, but you've also have kind of average guys that aren't very good at kind of going wheel to wheel. And then that's when all the problems are created. Whereas if you have more powerful bikes where you have to make the difference with your riding, it spreads the field out a little bit.
Yeah, but I mean, the Moto3 bikes are not easy bikes, are not like the Super Sport 300. So they are fast bikes. They are powerful bikes, considering the you know, the dimension of the bike, and it's not an easy bike. So I think it's I mean, we've been looking for this, I mean, having highest level of competition, and they are all together at the moment, so it can be a problem. Same with Moto2. If you are not, I mean, if the riders cannot make the difference, they will all ride together, and that's it means problems. So I think it's more related to their the way to ride, because they are not going to change the regulations from night to you know in like this. So I think it's more a message that they need to be sending to the field, to the riders, and they need to. I mean, it happened to the past. I remember when I think it was in 2006, 2007, we had huge crashes. I remember one in Turquía with Hector Barberán, Simoncelli, and also Jorge Lorenzo at the beginning was very,
very
aggressive. In when he was in 125 and in 250,
and he got a race ban as well, didn't he?
Exactly. So, and he admitted after, I mean, in a few years later, that it was good for him. So that's a good message. That what I think that it's a good call.
Yeah, I agree. It's interesting as well, because you mentioned some of those riders. You know, Simoncelli, for example, did have a bit of a reputation as being quite aggressive, and I think that's the key issue, is the, like you say, is that they have to, you can't let that be the standard of racing. You know, the prime example I think we have in Moto3 is Darren Binder. Everyone goes, oh, it's dive bomb Darren, but you know, they can't really be doing that at this level, because you know, you need to be riding more clever, essentially.
Yeah, there's another part of this problem, which is it just, I don't know what to say, because it's something, it's a problem that there is there, which is, I don't know if the 17 years old kids are mature enough to, you know, to cope with...
Yeah.
To manage,
calculate the risks, yeah.
Yeah, and all this risk, because with 17 years old, you feel that you are invincible. You feel like Superman. And yeah. It's very difficult with this, with all the pressure that they need to manage for their families, for the teams, you know, looking for this rider lifestyle. And, you know, they succeed that they are gonna have. So I think it's all together, it's a mix that can lead into this kind of extreme behaviors on track, let's put it this way.
No, I agree. I mean, because you consider the fact that Pedro Acosta is going to be not even, barely 20 when he makes his MotoGP debut. It's not great for the riders coming up behind him that they think, oh, you know, I'm going to be 22. That's going to be too old. It's wrong.
But yeah, that's the thing. I mean, that's the goal. That we, in this world now, we are going far too fast.
Yeah, so, and there's no need for it, because your talent has nothing to do with age. You know, Mick Doohan was 24 when he made his Grand Prix debut, and it didn't slow him down. You know,
yeah, but I
different time, I know, but you know,
no. But unfortunately, I think that's how the things are established at the moment. Unfortunately,
yeah,
and I don't know who will be the first to change it. You know what I mean?
Yeah, that'll be an interesting thing. Let's go back to the race, the MotoGP race, that is, because we have now a championship, almost won. Fabio Quartararo put in a really good race, I thought, to finish second, and now to crucially beat Pecco Bagnaia in third, and now he's got a 52-point advantage, can win the championship at Misano, but he's not. This will be the interesting point. This was something you mentioned last week, is that these final races, that will be interesting to see how Fabio manages the pressure compared to last year, and we're now at that point where we're going to see it, but it doesn't sound like it's getting to him yet, which is interesting.
Yeah, I think he's managing the pressure fantastic.
Yeah.
I mean,
it's really Jorge Lorenzo kind of style when his peak Yamaha days.
Yeah. I mean, he believes that he has to be the one, the champion, and he's racing as a champion.
Yeah.
Already having everything under control. Yesterday he told us that he's the happiest P2 in his whole career, which means that he's in that level of understanding and on of that level of knowing what to do in every single race. I mean, there's completely no point yesterday on fighting against Mark, on trying to, I mean, and same in Misano.
Mm-hmm.
At some point I thought, well, he can try the overtaking to Pecco, but it wasn't worth it.
It's interesting because both Fabio and Pecco are doing exactly what the championship challengers should be doing, is that they're getting the maximum results possible. Because Pecco admitted that he didn't have the pace of Mark, so he knew that at the start of the race what he had to do was save his tire. And okay, he was beaten by Fabio, but you know, he did all he could do, and they're both champion material. You know, they're just doing everything that they should be doing as champions.
Yes, but the problem is that the gap that Fabio has at the moment is huge.
Yeah.
It's huge. So it's.
But you know, going to Misano, you know, we know how quick Pecco was there last week.
Yeah,
so.
but it has to happen something. I mean, Fabio needs to make a big mistake or being taken off by somebody else.
Yeah, and in lieu of that happening, what Pecco just needs to do is what he's been doing, is if he can just drag it out a little bit longer, and then maybe the mistake will come from...
I mean, don't get me wrong. I mean, Pecco's season has been fantastic, but the problem was the first half of the season, where Fabio was completely out of range for anybody.
Yeah, and there were a couple of, you know, there were a couple of real big mistakes from Pecco as well. Magello was one.
Exactly.
You know, which he, to be fair to him, he has, you know, he's looked back on and admitted and said, look, well, you know, that's where it went wrong for him. But yeah, it's hard to see Fabio losing this, but you know, this is MotoGP. Just finally, it is the end of Joan Mir's title defence. You know, it's impossible for him now to win it. He wasn't going to, but it's kind of... I thought that race was sort of indicative of how his championship defence has gone, and that, you know, he's doing the best he can, but he's really hampered by the bike, essentially.
Yeah, I think that's the limit of the bike, but don't get me wrong. I mean, don't forget that you always have to compare with his teammate, and his teammate was much closer to the top three guys. So I think that for both sides they need to make a step. I mean, of course we were expecting a bit more from the Suzuki, but at the same time, I mean, the champion needs to show his potential, and then he's a title material, let's put it this way.
Yeah, I agree with that. Of course, there was an incident with Jack Miller. He was given a penalty. Didn't really make any difference. And Joan was quite funny about it afterwards. But yeah, a big job ahead for Suzuki over the winter, I think, is the...
Yeah, I think so. They need to change a bit the approach. I think they need to approach. They need to speed up. Because otherwise, they're going to get stuck. I mean, which is clear, considering that... I wouldn't say that this bike is a mistake, because this bike is an evolution from the from the champion's bike. But
it's not aggressive enough.
Exactly.
An evolution.
I mean, they need to put an extra. They need to find something, otherwise they will be even more far.
Yeah, it's a wholesale thing that needs to happen. They need a satellite team. They need a team principal. They need a proper team boss, and they need, like you say, they need to get Japan working.
And don't forget that, I mean, really soon the riders will start negotiating next contracts, and of course Joan is a very demanded rider, so they also have the risk of losing Joan if they don't give him enough guarantees about the potential and about all the efforts they're gonna do.
Yeah, I agree. On that note, I think we'll wrap up there, Yuri, because we're both incredibly tired after what was a really terrible schedule this weekend. We'll be back. We've got a couple of weeks break, but we'll be back at some point to look ahead to what could be a crowning day for Fabio Quartararo and Misano. You can listen to all of our other podcasts on Spotify and all your podcast platforms, and follow Autosport and motorsport.com for all your MotoGP coverage as usual. But until the next time, it's a very warm goodbye.